Welcome to Monday night at Lion's Roar. And we'll begin with preliminary prayers on page 3 of this booklet if you haven't seen this. Is there anybody here for the first time? Hello. Welcome. Glad to have you with us. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. When you, chief of humans, were born, you took 7 steps on this great earth and you said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at that time, I prostrate. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the 3 worlds, supreme protector, to you I prostrate. Endowed with the supreme marks, a face like the stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The 3 worlds are not like you who is free from dust, matchless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I prostrate. Protector endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, field of ocean-like merits and good qualities, to the thus gone I prostrate. Through purity, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil-gone realms, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace, I prostrate. From freedom, teaching the path, well-abiding in the pure trainings, holy field endowed with good qualities, to the Sangha also I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma refuge, homage to the great Sangha, to all 3 ever devout homage. To all worthy of respect, bowing with bodies as many as all realms' atoms in all aspects, with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous action, accumulate merit and goodness, subdue your own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusions, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning and clouds, look at all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained the state of the all-seeing, and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate migrators from the ocean of existence, stirred by the waves of aging, sickness, and death. I take refuge in the Guru, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I'm enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Respectfully, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I confess all of my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtuous actions of all ordinary and noble beings. Please, Buddha, remain as our guide, and turn the wheel of Dharma until samsara ends. Through the merit created by myself and others, may the two bodhicittas ripen, and may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. This offering I make of a precious jeweled mandala, together with other pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our body, speech, and mind. O my masters, my yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith. Accepting these out of your boundless compassion, please send forth waves of your blessings. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Khan Nuyatayam. And now the Heart of Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. I prostrate to the Arya Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time. The Bhagavan was dwelling on Massive Vultures Mountain, on Raja Griha, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time, the bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya of Avalokiteshvara looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then, through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya of Avalokiteshvara: how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya of Avalokiteshvara said this to the Venerable Shariputra: Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly, beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no eye element, and so on, and up to, and including, no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to, and including, no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the endpoint of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly, completely awaken to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as the truth, since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared Tayata Gate Gate Paragate Parasangate Bodhisoha. Vata gate gate paragate parasam gate buddhi soha. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you have indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan having thus spoken, the venerable Shatavaviputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the worlds of gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan.
Thanks for coming. Good to see everyone. Yeah. Am I talking loud enough now? Okay, in the back. We're continuing our reading of Lotus Sutra. Chapter 17 of the Variety of Blessings. At that time, when the great congregation heard the Buddha teach that the length of his life was such a large number of eons, innumerable, countless living beings received great, abundant benefits. Then the world-honored one said to Maitreya Bodhisattva, the great one, Ajita, when I taught that the length of the Tathagata's life is very long, living beings as numerous as the sands of 680 billion myriads of Ganges accepted the teaching of the non-arising of all things. And 1,000 times more Bodhisattva great ones attain mastery of the incantation that enables them to hear and to retain what they hear. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as specks of dust in an entire world delighted in being eloquent and unhindered in speech. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as specks of dust in an entire world attain the power of incantation, which enables them to make hundreds of thousands of billions of repetitions. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as the specks of dust in a 3,000 great thousandfold world turn the irreversible Dharma wheel. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as the specks of dust in 2,000 middle-sized lands turned the pure Dharma wheel. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as specks of dust in 1,000 small lands were assured of attaining supreme awakening after 8 rebirths. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as specks of dust in 4 continent worlds were assured of attaining supreme awakening after 4 rebirths. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as specks of dust in 3 world continent worlds were assured of attaining supreme awakening after 3 rebirths. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as specks of dust in 2 4 continent worlds were assured of attaining supreme awakening after 2 rebirths. And Bodhisattva great ones as numerous as the specks of dust in a single 4 continent world were assured of attaining supreme awakening after 1 rebirth. And living beings as numerous as specks of dust in 8 worlds all aspired to supreme awakening. When the Buddha had told about these Bodhisattva great ones obtaining such great benefits of the Dharma, Mandarava and great Mandarava flowers rained down from the sky and were scattered over the innumerable hundreds of thousands of billions of Buddhas seated on lion seats under the jeweled trees. Do you feel the flowers falling? These are what the yellow banners represent, the flowers falling. It's the Lotus Sutra. It's somewhat like tantric literature. The the meaning has to be explained and decoded a little bit. Otherwise, you're thinking, well, it's just on and on. What the Buddha is doing in this introductory talk from this chapter is saying the whole situation's covered. The whole universe is covered with Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. All the enumerations and the number of Bodhisattvas, everybody is included and everything's covered. This is the way Bodhisattvas do their journey. They cover the whole territory. This is important. This is the point of the talk. Bodhisattva journey, which includes Tantra journey, means we're here to cover the entire territory. Usually, when we think of a journey or a path, it's very functional, and we just want to get very quickly from point A to point B, correct? We want to learn a technique very quickly, like, just teach me how to do this really quickly so I can do this, and then I'm on to something else. Please make it simpler, these kinds of things. But so there's a sense we're driving through territory, speeding through territory, instead of actually exploring and sampling all of the territory. So that's normal samsaric approach. Of course, what happens when we try to do that approach is we actually don't even go through straight line. We end up getting sidetracked and get off the road. So that's one vision of the path that's is talked about in Dharma training, because to talk skillfully to people, you have to say, okay, you do this, and just keep doing this, and you'll get there. You know, like, just get on I-80, and you'll get to San Francisco, and like that. Because people want to know these kind of definite directions. So, that's making use of samsaric beings' need to know, like, I want to know exactly where I'm going, and I want to get there as fast as possible, and I want to avoid all the problems and distractions. So a lot of the Dharma teachings, particularly Hinayana teachings, are set up that way. The path seems, and even Mahayana teachings, the path seems very, like, kind of linear. Just, you know, do this and do this and do this, and kind of ascend the mountain and do this and do this, and you'll get there, that kind of style. So we do talk occasionally in that way, and that can be helpful, because when someone is stuck in samsara, you can't always give highest yoga teachings or Dzogchen teachings, because people go, well, that's really nice, you tell me everything's here right now, but I have to get somewhere else real fast, so how do I get there? But the Lotus Sutra is one of those transitional sutras and teachings where the Buddha is trying to teach an all-encompassing dharma to a group of people, nuns, monks, householders, and such, who are generally are interested in a linear path. So going on and on, covering all the territory is the message that is given when we go through all these enumerations. So if somebody said, well, how do I get to a certain place? Let's say you've picked out a certain place in San Francisco. You'd say, well, you get there by, visiting Croy Tower. You get there by visiting Golden Gate Bridge. You get there by visiting, Golden Gate Park. Just going on and on about what's there in the territory. And then they would say, well, how do I get to San Francisco? And you'd say, well, you get there by, well, where do you live? Okay, I live in Carmichael or something. Well, you get to San Francisco by visiting every little road in Carmichael and every little blade of grass in Carmichael. And then you visit every little blade of grass in, Arden Arcade. And then you visit every blade of grass in, Midtown or USAC, right? And people go, well, that'll just take forever. Doesn't it feel like that? Like, well, I'll never get to San Francisco if I have to go to every little place in Carmichael, which is a nowhere land, and then... So in the tantras and alluded to in the Lotus Sutra, we teach how to entirely visit all of the territory and accomplish the whole journey in one day. This kind of, sometimes, Zen koans are useful or stories, because they're so poetic. There was a story about a woman whose child had died, which is horrific, of course, and but she didn't seem, according to the congregation or temple she was in, she didn't seem to be grieving in the proper way, which generally would be to show up and make a lot of offerings. So somebody says, well, how are you going to transfer, the punya, the positive potential, the merit? And she said, it's like this. And she had kind of a comb or part, kind of barret or something in her hair, and she moved it from this side to this side. And she said, the merit has been transferred. So that's like saying, if we can explore every piece of the territory and arrive there in one day, nothing's left out. Let's move it from here to here. That's not very linear, is it? Okay. So we can actually do that. We can actually have an experience of totality, so that even when we're, kind of moving through our life, which is what the journey is about, the whole thing is moving with us, because we're not trying to move through a territory like, I just want to hell with Dixon, I'm just going to get something, or Vacaville, I'm not stopping for the the outlets, I'm going, you're, each moment of your life, you're entirely bringing the whole world along with you. So you're bringing every little something in Carmichael, every little something in Davis, every little something in Elk Grove, right? It's all going along. So it's from this point of view that we actually start the process of doing Tantra. Tantra means continuity or weave. Of course, we know what Kama Sutra Tantra is, you know, pleasure-based Tantra, and that's fine too, but the fundamental thing we're looking at is the continuity. So the whole thing goes along. In a sense, the Egyptians had kind of the right idea. It was concretized, you know, thinking like, well, you do take everything with you. So we don't quite concretize it that way, you know, but the whole world is going with you. It doesn't usually feel that way, does it? It feels like we're kind of having to push our way through the world, you know, trying to drive through the world, or, you know, when we're aggressive, it was just like, get the F out of my way. Don't you see I'm trying to do something here at the temple? Get out, you know. So instead, like, the whole thing is going along with you. You are co-emergent, and you know, every little detail is going along. So from that way of thinking, if you're talking about journey, so you're noticing and commenting and appreciating everything, because you know it's going along with you. So the normal kind of like linear view of, now I'm going to accomplish this and get that out of the way, and now I'm going to accomplish this and get that out of the way, is how it's sometimes presented, many times presented in the beginning, because we won't listen to anything else. But after we mature in our practice, we see that we're taking the whole world with us, and the world is walking along with us. Maybe some of you have had the experience of being in the woods, and maybe in winter, for example, or maybe summer, but the moon is just not too high, and you're walking, and the moon is walking with you. Yeah. The whole world is just like that. But usually we see a static world that we're kind of trying to get through, aren't we? I'm just trying to get through my life, you know. So that's of course samsara. So the moon is walking with us, the trees are walking with us, you know, kind of like, you know, Lord of the Rings. The Ents are walking, right? But the whole thing, you know, sometimes we describe it as the whole universe is like in this kind of free fall. It's kind of like Alice in Wonderland, you know, Alice falls down the rabbit hole, and the things are kind of floating down with her. It looks very solid. It looks like where we're sitting on the ground. But what if everything was kind of falling with us, right? It wouldn't be any different. So the Lotus Sutra goes into all these details to let us know that it's all happening simultaneously. It's all happening eternally. Eternity isn't like one long kind of, you know, just adding up the numbers. It's like it's all going along together. I don't know how to, you know, once when a lama starts giving these kinds of teachings, the lama's assuming that some people have done enough meditation experience where the usual dualistic fixations of samsara and the linear worldview of collapsed and, you know, rigid concepts have begun to soften a little bit. so that you know, we have that sense a little bit of being in a flow, or sometimes people said in the zone, right? So there's a sense of the world, and you are, you know, somewhat confluent, right? Sometimes people experience that in sports, you know, they talk about, you know, it's just like, it's just working out and the ball ended up in the basket or something like that. So it's going with you like that. Maybe just stop here for a minute, and someone can raise their hand going, this isn't meeting my needs at all. But or we can, you know, like say, oh, that's interesting. What about this? So I'll stop here for some. Ellen's on. She got it. You're in the queue. Got it.
Not that it's not meeting my needs, because I think it's fascinating, yeah. But here's my question.
Yeah.
So if the whole world's moving with me, and the whole world's moving with Patty, are we the same, or are two worlds moving at the same time, or what?
You know, at this point, we're not, you know, with this kind of experience or level of talking, we're actually not, you know, talking about same or different. Those would be a category, you know, that would be useful, you know, in a two-dimensional world. And there's an attempt to kind of describe it in some kind of way, too, with one of the heroes of the Avatamsaka Sutra, Sudana, who has the vision from Maitreya's tower and is able, sees this called the net of Indra. It's a little bit static way of explaining it. So there's a net, you know, like a fishing net, and there's a jewel in each piece of the net, and each jewel reflects each other jewel perfectly. So each jewel is contained in each other. So it's an infinite variety like that. So everything's just there all at once. So it's like the mandala is there all at once. That's why we see mandala from kind of aerial vision, right? You know, like half Kalachakra mandala, because we're looking at kind of a schematic from a top, right? So it's all at once.
And in the same sense, it's all one mandala?
We could say it's all one mandala. Sometimes we use that terminology in some areas. It's funny, except for the Yogacharans, sometimes Dharma people don't want to say it's all one, because then, you know, because then the Vedantins sometimes are saying it's all one. So we're more likely to say boundless, completely uninhibited. And, you know, we're also likely to you know, bring in a certain kind of rawness and a certain kind of emotional. So, like in Dujin Rinpoche's small Nundro, you know, he has it's translated as senses, uninhibited naked ease. Because we're after, like, well, you know, it doesn't really intellectually, it doesn't feel like things when you're in that, like it's all together feeling. You're not thinking one or two, you see, because those are philosophical categories. It just feels like uninhibited naked ease. There's completely no, you know, open like that. So we tend to go towards, of course, that. We could say one in the sense we're not noticing differentiation, but or oneness. So we could say one. But usually you don't say one. We just say, We usually don't say not to either. Sometimes, every once in a while, we say not to. Sometimes, you know, so I've got to qualify that. But it's generally the sense of completely boundless quality. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah.
While you were talking, I was thinking of just the planet Earth going around the sun at high speed.
Yeah.
We're spinning at a high speed.
Yeah.
The sun's moving through space.
Yeah. Yeah.
The galaxy's moving through
space. Yeah.
But we don't notice that we're all going together.
Yeah. We're at high speed, too. Yeah. So, you know, we're all going at least 186 miles per second right now. all at once, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't feel that way, but I know that we are. No.
In the nature films, you know, when they have, well, let's say, a school of smelt, you know, this flash, but there's seemingly billions of them, but they're all moving, you know, and it's just, or when you see, I don't know, thousands of birds doing their thing.
Yeah.
You know, and they have these, that's what came to mind.
Yeah, that's nice, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, like maybe because of the fires and the ash, there weren't as many crows in McKinley Park. A lot of times around dusk, you know, crows show up and they all kind of do this kind of thing. So you can't say they're individual or you can't say they're a group, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. All kind of together. So, nevertheless, we do have also a relative self that appears to, you know, be born and appears to have to master certain developmental challenges and learn language and math and figure out if people like them or not, and you know, goes through all these developmental steps, right? So this kind of transcendent view of Dharma is very completion style teaching. So, you know, it doesn't feel like you have to do anything because we're already doing it. Just like we don't really have to do anything about our heart except, you know, not be mean to it, right? It just works fine, right? Hopefully. We have to fix it when it goes wrong, but we don't have to constantly remind our heart to be pumping, do we? That's like the absolute world. We don't have to constantly remind our Buddha nature. We don't, because we're just, the heart's going along with us, right? You know, our individual mind is going along with you when you get up from the chair and go home, right? You don't have to be saying, oh, you know, mind, please go with me. maybe you do, I don't know. So, you know, take your meds, but on the private level, we do have to master, on the individual level, we do have to master certain developmental steps. So that's where all these individual practices come in. But the individual practices like that we kind of point out, like, okay, now you've got to do shamatha and then vipassana and then you know, you're doing lojong and you're doing this and reading Prajnaparamita, and then you're doing study, and then you're doing Nandro, and then you're doing different levels, Tantra, and then Mahamudra, you know, blah, blah, blah. That isn't actually the journey. That's kind of the places you visit on the journey. It's so the inner teachings, the teachings that are usually given privately in darshan, in private audience, you know, we're talked about what's it like to make this individual developmental journey so we can appreciate that everything's going along with us. So there is an individual sense of path where people progressively become to appreciate and understand this very strange world where you can say everything's going along with us, and where, you know, flocks of birds can kind of all go along with each other, or we feel in the zone, or you can transfer the mirror just by moving a comb from one side to another, that world. So the last year I've been working on something I've called the Shambhala Journey, which is an attempt to put together these kind of developmental steps of a bodhisattva, and, you know, hope to start presenting that maybe, I don't know, who's teaching this Sunday coming? Me? Someone else? Okay, maybe I'll talk about it then. So even though everything's going along with us, and we may have that realization, there is levels of appreciation and maturity involved for, you know, being awake to that. So, for example, if there are different feelings if you see something, journey someplace for the first time. There are different feelings when you return to something you haven't seen in maybe 40 years, right? That has lots of memories, and there's different things you experience when you routinely go to the same place. So seeing something for the first time is returning to a place that you haven't visited and maybe has lots of memories, and it's like going, you know, maybe every year to the same place, right? These have different appreciations, right? So that's what we're talking about in the path, is learning how to appreciate the way we visit and encounter the different parts of the territory. So it isn't quite that we're always going to new territory, but we're seeing the territory, the mandala, with more mature eyes or new eyes each time. There are many other ways to see. I'm just enumerating three for you, like what you see for the first time, what you haven't seen for many years but was had a profound impact on you, and then, you know, what you see every day. So you probably see your kitchen every day, right? Is it every day? So that's one aspect of journey. If you were picked for one of those TV shows that remakes your house, you would see it maybe brand new, or your first time you see a house and go, oh, that's great. And then there's a returning to maybe some of you had the experience of returning to a town maybe you grew up in that you hadn't seen in years, right? And there's seeing that. It's not different territory, really. Okay, maybe a few things have changed in 40 years, but same territory, you're covering it in a certain way. And that's kind of the path aspect of ultimate teachings. We can take a few questions on that before we take a break. Yeah. I know most people, we're starting out, we're new, so, you know, we have these different practices, and most of the time, we're just trying to get the training right, you know? I know that. You're just trying to get, like, okay, it's kind of like being at the gym and or your workout place, and you're just trying to get, how do you do the exercises correctly so you can build, you know, whatever situation you want. But, you know, the workout at a gym or a yoga center or a Pilates or something is not quite the same as real life, right? But if we're in the gym, you know, we want to know, like, asking the trainer, you know, like, what weight should I have? How many times should I do this repetition? What's the best way to work with this, right? That's most of, we spend so much time in all the different yoga practices we do, learning just how to do the technique properly. You know, and I know everyone in this room probably just wants to, like, I just want to get it right, you know. But at some point, well, we're not going to be doing the formal training, as I like to call it. We're doing practice in everyday life. And that should feel different than doing the training, right? It's supposed to feel different. You know, it's supposed to, like, you might have done some, style, you know, like, and then you're using it to pick up a grocery bag or something. Or you might do a farmer's walk with your, you know, barbell or something, but, you know, then you're finally carrying a bucket of water for your garden. So there's a similarity, but it's different. One's the training, so you're learning how to do the technique, right? And one's, you know, the practice or the everyday life. And we can't spend too much time training. We also have to do the practice. So I know when I'm talking here about doing these weird things, about revisiting old places, going place for the first time, it's, what's that got to do with me learning how to do shamatha meditation, or me learning how to do Tara meditation, or me learning how to do Dzogchen? It does, but it doesn't look like the same as doing the training. If your practice is looking exactly the same as your training, what does that mean? You're still training, that's right, you know. It'd be like, you know, you're traveling a foreign country and you're still opening up kind of the book, or you're punching in Google Translate or something like that. You know, instead of just saying it, right? But we need to do both. We do need to do both. So the path aspect has, that I'm talking about here, has to do with the practice aspect. It's not about doing the training properly. I know you want to do the training properly. I want to teach you how to do the training properly. So, yeah, how do you hold the mala? How do you sit up straight? And what do you pay attention to when? And what are different Buddhas look like? And what's the correct experience? But then you're not done. So then I do want you to go to a place that you've never seen before. I do want you to keep going back to a place that you've seen a million times. And I do want you going back to an old place. Yes.
So when you're doing practice, can you not, I mean, can't you get like OCD about, you know, like the water in the water bowl has to be within a fraction of an inch? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get OCD about all of that stuff. And then you just don't, that just doesn't make any sense at all. Then it's not any, it's not meaningful, it's not any fun.
I would use that for training, like I just want to do the water bowls correctly, right? Or some ritual correctly, that's called training. And then the practice is, you're not training anymore, you're just doing the water bowls. So it's just so, like, maybe you've done water bowls 1,000 times, so you're revisiting the territory of doing something. What's it like to visit this territory that you've done 1,000 times? which is different than trying to do it right. Yeah, totally different, you know. So being right is important in training. You know, you want to get it right, so you get it. But then in practice, that's different. You know. So training is the formal. Yoga's practice is the journey. So many people mistake, like, the whole journey is just getting expert in all these techniques, but that would be kind of like if you're a woodworker or something, you collect a whole bunch of nifty tools and you keep them sharpened, but you don't make anything. You're collectors. You're Dharma collectors. Many people do a lot of collecting. They just buy, like, tons of tankas and objects and statues and, you know, and then they don't do the practice. You know, I mean, it's nice if you're supporting artists, but, you know, then it doesn't really make any sense. Kind of interesting talk. No, I don't know. So I ask people to do a lot of reading and study and meditation in this Sangha. You know, then you'll either know my talks make really, really good sense or I'm clueless. But you have to do a lot of practice to know the difference, okay? Yeah. It takes a lot of practice to know if someone's totally clueless. You know what I mean? It's not totally obvious. Just with anything, right? You know, we might say, well, that person doesn't know how to drive. But it's hard to tell in kind of Dharma spiritual practice if someone's really totally clueless, isn't it? It you know, it takes some discernment sometimes. I mean, somebody could, you know, could be being kind of odd and they could be quite advanced, you know, so it takes training to see, okay, is that totally clueless? So please take a break and then we'll do some sitting practice. Okay? Yeah, or come up and say hi. You know, to kind of encapsulate the talk, when we're doing Tantra, we're taking the result as the path, which means we're putting the absolute world, the flow world, it's all right here world, in the foreground, and the relative world, the world that's checking to see if we're doing it right, to see who I am, that's a little bit in the background. Usually, for people, the foreground is always like, am I doing it right? Who am I? What's going on from that point of view? So we're turning it upside down. We're starting first with the absolute world. We're not tossing out the relative world. It's just in the background. Easy. It is important to train diligently. Training in the yogas. The yogas mean that we're training to wake up and clarify all the senses. They become the Buddhas. So waking up your eye and ear and nose and smell and taste, touch, everything, mind. So when those are awake and you know how to look and see and appreciate, then we explore the territory, right? So see something for the first time, see it again and again, go back and look at it after a while. The fourth thing is see it for the last time. Okay? That's a little difficult. Of course, we're always thinking, well, we don't, we're letting go. We won't see this for the last time, but we don't really believe it, right? You don't really think, well, there'll be one more time, or I'll get to visit it again, or maybe I'll see something new. But then we also have to develop the ability to visit a territory and like see it for the last time. I'm not saying letting go necessarily, because in our tradition, we don't go, well, it's impermanent, so we let go. Now, of course, in our tradition, we, seeing one's teacher, seeing one's homeland, seeing something for the last time is a very moving experience, right? We don't go, well, it's all impermanent, so being no, seeing it for the last time is a big deal, right? Very good. So let's do prayers. Thank you, everybody. Very good.
Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig, Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. May the teachings of the Buddha flourish, and may the upholders of the teachings remain forever. May they achieve happiness, and may they fulfill all their ultimate goals. Losan, magical display of the deep awareness of all the victorious ones, merciful giver of a stream of profound and vast instructions to the fortunate migrators, please remain always unchanging, unfading. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of objectless compassion. Manjushri, master of flawless wisdom. Vajrapani, destroyer of the entire host of Maras. Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the snowy land sages. Losangrakpa, I make request at your holy feet.
I'd like to especially thank everyone here today put so much work into helping Mohammed take down the iron fence. So far, I haven't heard anybody lost any fingers or toes, right, Dana? Nobody lost anything. So thank you, Brian, and everybody that helped. Looks different. I think it looks nice. So thank you for all that work people have done. I think everyone here has pitched in on some form of the fence and carried things. All right, see you soon. Yeah. did you see the fence fully for the last time? Anybody like?